The Tom Woods Show, episode 2012.
Prepare to set fire to the index card of allowable opinion. Your daily dose of liberty education starts here. The Tom Woods Show.
Hey everybody, Tom Woods here. Our old friend Eric Brakey, former Maine state senator, who's now with Young Americans for Liberty, and hosts, is it called Free America Now, the podcast?
Yeah, our new podcast, Free America Now, every Monday through Friday on everyone's favorite podcasting apps.
Well, how about that? Somebody else is trying to do a Monday through Friday podcast. I wonder who the pioneer of that was.
You know, I'm going to one-up you, Tom, because we also occasionally throw in a Sunday episode.
Well, occasionally, Old Woods used to do a bonus episode on the weekends, but now I just, you guys can do that. You can take over for that. I just want to relax on Sunday. But okay, so let's talk about, you have an article on antiwar.com that I'm linking to at tomwoods.com/2012. I wanted to keep it a secret until you said it, but then I remembered what I just said in the introduction and the title of the episode. So everybody kind of knows what we're talking about. But what is the actual occasion of this? We're not talking in the abstract about the possibility of adding women to the draft, but there's actually a bill being considered for that purpose.
Right. You know, this is a proposal that has gotten a lot further than you would think it has, considering how little attention has been paid to it with the trillions of dollars of money that's being thrown around in Washington, D.C. that everyone's fixated on for good cause. But in the National Defense Authorization Act, which has already passed the House of Representatives and is currently sitting in the U.S. Senate, they're going to be taking that up again after they come back from Thanksgiving recess. Is a provision that would require women to register for the military draft the same as men. Now, this is being put forward as an advancement for women's rights, if you can kind of conceive of that for a moment. Requiring women to register for military conscription, to give Congress and the whole Washington, D.C. military war machine the discretion to call up not just America's young men, but also America's young women against their will to fight and perhaps even die in wars overseas. This is being hailed as an advancement for the cause of women's rights, despite the fact that women already have the right to voluntarily join the military. Women can even serve in combat roles if they choose to and they meet the standards for doing so. But this is sponsored by Democrat Representative Chrissy Houlihan of Pennsylvania. It's got bipartisan support, including from everyone's favorite Wyoming chicken hawk, Liz Cheney. And it's kind of perverse when you really consider it. You know, the last time Washington exercised the military draft, over 58,000 of America's sons died in Vietnam. Given this history, it's hard to imagine what justification can be made for extending to the war machine an additional line of credit to America's daughters. And for so many in Congress to cite feminism and progressivism as the cause of this, to build this as some advancement for the social justice warrior cause, I think really is the height of just how cynical the war machine has become. Because if you actually poll women, what they think about it, by a 2-to-1 margin, women don't want to have to register for the military draft, and who can blame them?
Yeah, no kidding. Well, as a matter of fact, Russell Kirk, who was a central intellectual in post-war American conservatism, and I think around 1944, he was still a young man, but he described the military draft as slavery. So this isn't some left-wing pinko position, you know, especially after we've lived through this COVID fiasco where the presumption is, so first you have the income tax where Ron Paul was right. The presumption is the government in principle, because there's no principled reason they couldn't raise the income tax to 99.9% or even 100%. So the idea is they own everything and they'll decide what percentage you're allowed to keep. And then they also own your body because they can inject into it whatever they want. And now what? They can also send you anywhere where they want on some crazy mission that has nothing to do with anything? The idea to me, there could still in 2021 be any actual conservative who supports that is incredible to me. But the good news is I think relatively few of them are. I think they're those who might have been inclined to support something like that it's been beaten out of them by reality. And certainly the idea of adding women in the name of equality, that is so absurd. So here we have this crazy policy being enforced on men, and typical equality movements today, never occurs to them, well, how about we don't impose this on anybody and we're equally free of it? No, we have to be equally under its yoke. That's the kind of equality you support? It's ridiculous.
Right. It's a form of equal slavery, not equal rights. I suppose that they are both a form of gender equality, but shouldn't we seek equal freedom under the law? Shouldn't that be the goal? And I will say, you mentioned Kirk. You know, he's, of course, not the first person to point out the obviousness that this is a form of slavery. Of course, Milton Friedman is famous. You know, this is one of the great libertarian victories, right? Ending the active use of the draft in America. There's that famous moment. Milton Friedman was on President Nixon's commission for an all-volunteer military. And General Westmoreland, who was the commander of U.S. forces at the time, famously appeared before that commission in protest of what they were exploring. He said, "I will not command an army of mercenaries." And Milton Friedman, to his credit, just quipped back immediately. He said, "General, would you rather command an army of slaves?"
Yeah.
And I'm sure you could hear a pin drop in the room at that moment. But yeah. But even going back much further than that, people oftentimes think that the military draft is something that has been with us throughout, you know, all of, you know, American history. But it's kind of like the income tax, right? It was actually established under Woodrow Wilson in the Progressive Era. And we've just come to think, since anyone who would have been alive back then is no longer with us, we just think that this has always been the case. But it wasn't until World War I that we really had the draft as we know it. And you go back, this question had been considered. You can go back to the War of 1812. I think I heard you speak with a guest about this speech from Daniel Webster on the floor of the House of Representatives.
Yeah.
There was a push for, you know, and I'm sad that it was coming from James Madison, who, in other respects, I'm oftentimes a fan of, but James Madison had gotten us into this disastrous, poorly conceived war with the British invading Canada. We don't talk too much about that these days. And the British retaliated. They burned the White House to the ground. And in the midst of all this, there was this debate about conscription. And Daniel Webster, he called it murder if we were to adopt such a policy. He said, "In the sight of heaven, it is murder that every politician who voted to forcibly conscript American citizens to go off and fight," because of course, many of these times it would be wars of invasion, which I guess the war against Canada was wars of invasion. He said, "Every conscripted man who falls would be basically a blot on their eternal soul, that even if millions of years passed by, they would have to answer for it in heaven." And he condemned them for somehow twisting the Constitution to extract slavery from the substance of a free government. And to Congress's credit at the time, maybe perhaps it was hearing those words and fearing for their eternal souls, they did not adopt this policy of conscription really in a serious way until Woodrow Wilson, you know, over a century later. But to think that we've gone from the days of Daniel Webster standing in the House of Representatives decrying this to now we have people like, there's a Republican congressman from Florida. His name is Michael Waltz, who is openly dreaming on the floor of the House. He's about a future crisis in which the military, quote, needs everybody, man, woman, gay, straight, any religion, black, white, brown, as if somehow this intersectionality campaign covers up the fact that this is murder. This is slavery that he's talking about. It's like he got his talking points from the same woke public communications people who designed the CIA's publicity campaign for about, you know, how they're so woke and intersectional now, and therefore we should ignore all the blood that's on their hands.
That Daniel Webster speech you mentioned, he also says that what an outrage it would be to claim that the Constitution authorizes any such thing. He says this is an outrageous accusation against the Constitution to make, that there's no way our Constitution, which is based on liberty, could support such an enormity as military conscription. So there's also that. Now, some people may say, this is all just for show, because really, when was the last time we really drafted anybody? And it's been a volunteer force certainly for your entire lifetime and just about my entire lifetime. So what are we worried about, really? Maybe we're exaggerating the threat here.
Right. It's an all-volunteer military force until it isn't. In fact, you have right now, the military is really struggling with a problem of declining enlistment numbers. Voluntary enlistment numbers are at an all-time low. I mean, for obvious reasons, we've gone through two decades of very unpopular foreign wars in the Middle East that have really, I think, soured the whole, you know, sentiments of a generation that military service is, you know, a noble thing that you want to be a part of. When we have seen the disasters in Afghanistan and Iraq and the ongoing undeclared wars in Syria and Yemen, more and more people don't want to be a part of this. And so enlistment numbers are dropping, and you have many in the military who are actively talking and have been actively talking and trying to push for a policy change of bringing back active use of the military draft. So those who suggest that this is purely a symbolic change, and I get it to some degree. Some people say this is the last legal distinction on the books in federal law between men and women, and they want to just get that one thing gone to have pure equality under the law. And I suppose I can understand that and sympathize with that to some degree. But those who think that this is just a symbolic change are really missing the real danger that is being put here. Now, as some have even suggested that, you know, women are much better suited for the kinds of military work that's done today. After all, women can operate a drone and bomb people from thousands of miles away just as easily as a man can. So they're envisioning, you know, women being conscripted to be drone operators. And I got to hand it to, there's been a really awesome bipartisan coalition. You've got, you know, folks ranging from Code Pink, you know, left-wing anti-war activists who've been incredibly consistent, founded by, I believe, the mother of a soldier who was killed in Iraq. They've got a petition drive against this. They're trying to defeat this. And they've partnered with like right-wing nationalist U.S. Senator Josh Hawley, who's also leading the charge against this. And then you also have Senators Rand Paul and Ron Wyden, who have sponsored legislation to get equality by going the other direction, right? Equal freedom under the law, abolishing the draft completely. If we're really interested in equal freedom, equality under the law, that would seem to me a much better proposal.
Agreed. And it reminds me of the conversations about trans people in the military. And, oh, well, in the name of equality, we need to make sure that trans people have equal rights in the military. Now, I'm going to say something that's maybe more radical than Eric Brakey and Young Americans for Liberty might be prepared to say. I don't want to implicate you, and heaven forbid you'd be implicated in everything Woods says. But the way I thought of it was this. It was a great opportunity of, instead of constantly being predictable, every word out of the mouths of the official spokespeople of the LGBT world. Not one of them complains about Fauci and AIDS in the 1980s anymore, because they're always in the service of the regime, the official political LGBT movement. They're in the service of the regime, so all that is forgiven. I mean, you can actually kill us and we won't even complain because we are so in the service of the regime. Well, likewise, there was an opportunity for trans people to say, you know what? We're the marginalized people of society. And so because we're the marginalized people, we side with, or at the very least, we sympathize with other marginalized people, namely people who are on the receiving end of U.S. government guns and bullets. And so heaven forbid we would want to ever be a part of that in the name of some bogus equality. We want to take the opportunity to say, you can take your military and stick it. We don't want to be part of that at all. We don't want to be part of this murderous foreign policy. We want to stand with marginalized and helpless people all over the world. There was their golden opportunity to say that. Golden opportunity. They're supposedly radical people on the fringes of society. And yet when push came to shove, they were as compliant as, oh, we just want to be part of the military like everybody else. What a pathetic missed opportunity that is. That's my radical statement that I do not implicate you in, Eric Brakey, but that's the way I feel about it.
Well, I can certainly say that there does seem to be a real concerted campaign, right, to use this kind of woke intersectionality, you know, to basically paint over all the bloodstains of the war machine with rainbow paint, right?
Oh, yeah. I think Raytheon had some ad about the diversity of their staff or some kind of thing like that. Like, oh, okay. And the thing is that the current progressive movement would watch an ad like that and say, God, these guys are super. I mean, what has happened to these people?
It really makes you miss the leftists of, yeah, even just the 2000s under the Bush era. I remember being, a young kid who was brainwashed by the neocons, and all my leftist friends were telling me Bush was a war criminal and Bush lied, thousands died. And I eventually came around and realized they were right. But by the time I did, so many of them had switched sides, and now they're applauding the war machine as long as the war machine is scoring enough woke intersectional points. I think to your point on Raytheon, this was several of the military industrial complex firms you had in the corporate press just raving reviews. Look, you know, four out of the five biggest military industrial complex companies, weapons manufacturers are now led by women. It's like, all right, well, that feels like we're rearranging deck chairs on the Titanic. I mean, okay, so now women can play a part in the mass murder of people in the Middle East and across the world. Isn't that so great? And it has moved the left off of what the call used to be, that we shouldn't be fighting all these wars. We shouldn't be invading countries, certainly without a congressional authorization of war. And now it's, hey, you know, we can have the whole Rainbow Coalition helping to commit mass murder campaigns.
It's a sad thing. Hey, folks, it's Tom Woods with a sponsor message. You know, as libertarians, we don't force people to do things, but we can certainly persuade them to do them. And you know that if somebody relies on your financial support, whether it's a child or an aging parent, even a business partner, you need life insurance. And most people need 10 times the life insurance coverage they get through their employer. Well, Policy Genius makes it easy to compare quotes from over a dozen top insurers all in one place. You could save $1,300 or more per year on life insurance by using Policy Genius to compare policies. It's super efficient. Eligible applicants can get covered in as little as a week thanks to an award-winning policy option that swaps the standard medical exam requirement for a simple phone call. Policy Genius has earned thousands of five-star reviews across Trustpilot and Google, and the process couldn't be easier. First, head to policygenius.com, and in minutes, you can work out how much life insurance coverage you need and compare personalized quotes to find your best price. When you're ready to apply, the Policy Genius team will handle the paperwork and scheduling for free. Policy Genius does not add on any extra fees. Well, head to policygenius.com to get started right now. Policy Genius, when it comes to insurance, it's nice to get it right. It's a sad situation we face. Now, at the same time, I wonder if the regime right at the moment, I mean, for a while, there hasn't really been much interest in launching a major war. We thought in the second Bush term that there might be a war with Iran. And then that kept popping up and being pushed back down, but it never happened. Mm-hmm. And right now, the regime has a lot. It's got its hands full, let's say. It's got the vaccine thing, and it's got inflation that is upsetting mainstream voters, and it's got, you know, all kinds of massive division in society. So on the one hand, you might think, well, they've just got too much going on. But on the other hand, as I'm talking this out, isn't that the exact moment that they might want to distract attention from all this by launching something? But the thing is, I don't see it. I don't see it on the horizon. I don't see what the next thing is. I haven't paid much attention to what the foreign policy establishment is saying these days, just because these days we're so focused on domestic policy.
My personal concern, and I'm sure if I was talking with someone like Scott Horton, he would be much more knowledgeable on all this. But my personal concern is the saber rattling with China and the fact that our foreign policy establishment has pretty much committed that if China goes into Taiwan, that we have committed that we're going to go to war with China and we're going to defend Taiwan. And I think in the ideal, I would love for Taiwan to remain independent, but is this really something we are ready to commit the lives of America's sons and daughters to? And rather than having a real public policy debate on this, like so many of the foreign policy decisions in this country, it's kind of just been, this is something that has been made behind, a decision's been made behind the scenes, not even necessarily by our elected officials, but by just the permanent foreign policy bureaucracy. This is the policy. And, you know, Congress is there to perhaps maybe rubber stamp it at the end of the day. But even if they don't, the rubber stamping by Congress is more of a formality these days than ever before. So I hope that that is a very remote possibility and that that never comes to pass. But that certainly seems to me to be the most likely scenario on the table right now, where we could end up in a situation where the foreign policy establishment decides we're going to war, that the current troop levels of the enlisted is not sufficient, and they decide that we have to institute a draft. Because certainly taking on a behemoth like China That would be a world war.
Well, we'll see. We, of course, have to do what we can to the extent the general public can do anything to stop these people, to prevent that from happening.
Yeah.
The draft idea. Oh, I beg your pardon. Go ahead.
I was going to say, certainly one thing we could do to let them know they wouldn't have the troops for that is to not extend a line of credit to them for the lives of America's daughters as well as America's sons, and remove that line of credit completely. Just abolish the draft. Do what Ron Wyden and Rand Paul are trying to do. And I think that would deter, to some degree, the foreign policy establishment from thinking they could pull something like this off.
Well, it's good that you have a Democrat working with Rand on that. It's incredible to me. Well, it's not really incredible to me, but it might be incredible to a lot of people that it's a Democrat who's pushing for this. You would think this would be some crazy warmonger lunatic doing this, but if they can put the phrase women's rights in there, it's so Orwellian. This is the state claiming the right to dispose of your life. This isn't you exercising your right.
Yeah.
This is you being
freedom is slavery, Tom.
Yeah. All right. The thing is, I almost can't talk about this. It makes me so angry. The doublespeak involved.
Yeah.
The doublespeak is just beyond belief. So I guess the part that mystifies me is, given that it's such an unpopular position to hold, that I can't believe that the answer really is that the Republicans are just that bad. Because here they have something. Sometimes they say, well, we have to be bad because the polling is against us, and if we vote the way you want, we'll get booted out of office. Okay, well, sometimes they say that. But here the polling is so with them, overwhelmingly with them, and they still can't do the right thing, half of them.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know if it's, I don't mean literally half. I don't know how many Republicans are in support of this, but I did read an article saying that the Democrats are overwhelmingly in favor and the Republicans are split.
Yeah.
So, here's a win, an easy win. These people want to have the right to draft your daughters into the military. We know most people don't want that. This is how crazed they've become, how detached from reality they've become. It seems like an easy one for the Republicans, and they won't take it.
Yeah, you would think. And, you know, credit again to, I'm not usually a fan of Josh Hawley, and I'm not necessarily sure that he is on our side, you know, because he opposes the draft. I think maybe it's for some other reasons, but he is leading a charge in the Senate to try to strip this out of the bill. He is working with folks like Code Pink, who have been one of the rare groups of consistently principled left-wing anti-war activists who don't change their cause just because it's Biden's war or Obama's war. They've been, you know, fighting this. I've seen Ted Cruz has signed on to the effort to try to strip this out. But really, it's in that bill. It's going to be a bit of a hurdle. You've got to get a majority of the U.S. Senate now to vote to remove it from the bill since it's already in there. So that's going to be happening after Thanksgiving break. I would encourage everyone, you know, I think part of the problem is there just has not been enough attention on this with everything else going on.
Yeah.
And so it's kind of sneaking its way in. So I would encourage everyone to just, if you are against this idea of expanding conscription, maybe you'd even like to see the draft repealed completely. I would encourage everyone, just get on the phone, call your U.S. senator's office, whether they're a Republican or a Democrat, tell them to support stripping this out of the National Defense Authorization Act, and tell them to support Rand Paul's and Ron Wyden's bill to abolish the draft completely. We've gone 50 years without an active draft. The fact that it's even still on the books in the first place is an injustice that's long overdue to be abolished.
You were saying that there hasn't been enough attention paid to this and people aren't aware of it. I didn't know about it. I mean, I have a podcast dedicated to issues like this. I didn't even know about it until you sent me that message. Like, I'm not even aware of it. And then I looked it up and got the information, but it's not exactly, you know, being shouted from the rooftops. And yet here is this momentous thing
right. That
touches a key aspect of what liberty is all about. And we're not even really aware that it's going on. And yet at the same time, people feel like we live under the best system in the history of the world, and this is the best it can possibly be. I don't know that it was normal for in major areas of your life for people to be completely at the mercy of murky behind the scenes stuff, a line in a bill somewhere that nobody even knows about. This is not the best conceivable system. We'll put it that way. There's got to be a better one than this.
Certainly. And you know, for right now, we can put the pressure on the politicians. At the end of the day, you know, that's the best thing we can do. The politicians want to get reelected. When they hear from their constituents and find out that something is unpopular, they begin to think twice. But they aren't hearing from people much yet. People aren't aware of it. So we got to make people aware. We got to encourage people to call their senators. And again, just give them a call, shoot them an email. Let's put the pressure on. You can even go to Code Pink has a petition. You can sign theirs. I'm sure they're getting, you know, petition signatures to their senators. But there is a look, the war machine is a bipartisan affair, but so is the opposition to the war machine. So if we can ratchet up the pressure campaign against these U.S. senators, we you know, there's a good coalition already in there against it. We can give them some support, and perhaps we might just be able to stop this from happening.
Before we go, Eric, I want to ask you a question that I know you won't answer. And you're going to say to me, Tom, I will answer any question you ask me. I'm sure that's the case, Eric, in all questions but this one. Are you, in fact, going to run once again for political office?
Well, I will answer that. I'm actively looking at going back and running for my old state Senate seat that I held for two terms in Maine. But federal office, I'm I'm kind of burned out on that for a while.
Yeah, okay.
But you know, I always go back to, you know, one of my favorite books on my bookshelf. It's this book called Nullification by Tom Woods. And I think about how many liberty legislators that Young Americans for Liberty has elected now. We've got close to 200 liberty legislators across the country in 37 states. And when I was last in the state legislature, you could maybe count to 10 if you were being generous. And now we have leaders who are, you know, nullifying all kinds of federal policies, fighting back against the lockdowns, getting constitutional carry passed across the country. There's so much happening on the state level in the state capitals. I almost think it's a distraction to run for federal office these days. I think the most important work is being done in the state capitals. So I'm actively looking at going back and picking up the work there and helping to work with some of these new liberty legislators who've been elected in my own state.
How many months or weeks during the year does the legislature meet in Maine?
In Maine, it's a part-time legislature, so it's about half the year.
You know, half the year. Okay.
Yeah,
that's more than I thought.
At least the first year, you're in for 6 months for the long session. The second year, you're in for 4 months. And then after that 4 months, you pretty much have to go out and hit the campaign trail because elections are right around the corner.
Right. So you would move. You're in Texas now. You'd move back to Maine.
Yeah, I'm back and forth. And I like it down here in Texas, but it's not home. Maine will always be where my heart is.
Oh, isn't that nice? I've kind of always felt that way. I mean, I'm glad I'm in Florida for, you know, political reasons these days. But my heart really, it will always be in Massachusetts. And I know all the problems. It doesn't matter. But I mean, if you're going to judge a place entirely by the sociopaths who rule it, then the terrorists have won. There are many, many good, beautiful, wonderful things about that place. The people are not necessarily always one of them, although I have many dear friends there and a little family. But my heart is still there. Every time I get back, I feel very sentimental and nostalgic when I'm there. So I can completely understand where you're coming from. When are you going to absolutely ironclad, once and for all, for sure, decide?
I've told
you were great. You were a great legislator. You were great. I want to tell everybody, you were great as a state senator.
Well, I appreciate it. I appreciated, Tom, you having me on your program over the years. Serving in the Maine Senate was one of the greatest honors of my life, and I got to work with so many thousands of grassroots people to pass constitutional carry. And I even remember, taking an idea I heard from the Tom Woods Show on, you know, right to try and nullifying the FDA to allow terminally ill patients the right to try non-FDA approved medications, and taking that and getting that into law, and then even going on getting that into the Republican Party platform on the national level. And then watching all the Republicans and Donald Trump take that up as an issue and sign that into law. So it was a real pleasure to serve in the Maine Senate. And I am just encouraged by so many folks who've taken that example that me and a few other kind of Ron Paul style legislators back in the day when we got elected on our own individual initiatives. So many others have come along, followed those examples. And now there's this broad coalition across the states. I think we can do more now to fight back against the federal government there than you could even do in Congress. So I will make a decision by the end of the year. That's what I've decided. And I'm talking it over with my wife quite a bit. She's got, you know, she's come to like Texas a little bit. So we might have to work something out there.
Ah, okay. All right. Well, we'll see what happens. But either way, we know you'll be doing good work. When you're with Young Americans for Liberty, you're doing good work. And when you're fighting for the good cause up there in Maine, you're also doing good work. All right. So let me direct people. YALiberty.org is the website. The podcast is Free America Now. And people can get that on any platform.
Yeah, any platform. And we have conversations every single day with people across the Liberty movement. And in particular, we talk with Liberty activists who are doing great things through the Young Americans for Liberty Network on college campuses or even just out in the world. And we also feature a lot of interviews with our legislators, like Representative Jonathan Hill of South Carolina, who is leading the charge for constitutional carry in his state. Delegate Nick Freitas of Virginia, who was just on talking about the revolution that just took place earlier this month in Virginia as Republicans took control of the legislature there. And we doubled the size of the Young Americans for Liberty Hazlitt Legislator Coalition there in Virginia. So a lot of great things happening, and we are covering that on Free America Now. And I welcome anyone who wants to go and give it a listen. You can find our podcast on all your favorite podcasting apps.
All right, very good. I have a link to it also at tomwoods.com/2012. And also I'm linking to Eric's article on this matter of the draft and women and the polling data, and all that can be found in that article. So thanks very much, Eric. Let's see. It is Tuesday, so Thanksgiving's 2 days away. I hope you have a great Thanksgiving. I'll be anxious to hear what you decide to do.
Thank you, Tom. Great talking with you.
All right, everybody, before we go, I think there's something I forgot to tell the podcast audience. I was not too long ago interviewed for a forthcoming docuseries called COVID Revealed. Now, as I think about it, maybe I did tell you this, but it just goes to show middle age, you know, it couldn't hurt to tell you again. Maybe you missed it the first time. I'm not referring to the documentary made by the folks from the Sound Mind Creative Group I interviewed. Now, that one's going to have like animation and graphs and human interest stories and so on. This one is a series of interviews with a lot of the censored and silenced voices out there. So they interviewed me for it. And I think I did a pretty good job, and I hope you'll be pleased at how I represented our little Tom Woods Show community there. But the model is the same as what they've done for their documentaries on wine and wineries, on vaccines, on psychedelics, on money and investing, and related topics. It's that as long as you sign up in advance, you can watch the entire series for free. So you want to see old Woods on there, because I did a good job, I'm telling you. I'm pretty confident in it. But also, there are a lot of other people you're going to find very interesting in the series as well. And to sign up, go to tomwoods.com/revealed, because the documentary is called COVID Revealed. So tomwoods.com/revealed. You're going to love the series. You can watch it for free. So it'll help you, but you'll also help me, because this is the second documentary series they've done where they've interviewed me. And the more people I bring to them as audience members, I think the more likely it is that they'll keep inviting me back to be interviewed. And if you think that's a good thing, then help me out by registering to watch it at tomwoods.com/revealed. So go do that as your homework assignment, and I'll see you tomorrow.
Become a smarter libertarian in just 30 minutes a day. Visit tomwoods.com to subscribe to the show for free, and we'll see you next time.
Like the sound of the Tom Woods Show? My audio production is provided by Podsworth Media. Check them out at podsworth.com.